Happy Sunday morning or Saturday evening, depending on wherever you're joining from. Whether you're joining today of us for the first time on this webinar series, or you're a regular listener, on behalf of all the volunteers, I want to say what a joy and blessing it is for us to meet you in this way. We can't see you on the screen, but your presence, your attention, and your love feeds us and all our guest speakers each fortnight, one after another. Thank you all. My name is Rohit, and I am your host for today's Awaken Talk. Awaken Talks is a space where we hold conversations with individuals whose inner journeys inspire us and whose work is transforming our world in large or small ways. It's an all-volunteer-run offering of Service Space, a global platform founded on the simple principle that by changing ourselves, we change the world. Thank you for joining us. And I request that we start our call today with a minute of silence to quieten our minds so that we can be more fully present in this time and space and in our interconnection. And I will invite our dear friend Bhumika to open the silence after a minute with a small song or prayer. Thank you.
May the love we're sharing spread its wings and fly across the earth and bring new joy to every soul who is alive. May the blessings of your grace, my Lord, shine on everyone, and may we all see the light within, within, within. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy.
Thank you so much, Bhumika. That was lovely. Legend has it that Bhumika used to sing to big crowds in Gujarat during Navratri time, during Garba time. But now, you know, with her transformation, she just sings for like small groups, for friends, for love and for blessings. So thank you so much, Bhumika, for bringing that spirit here in this gathering. And and for today's talk, I am really delighted, and I am feeling blessed to have one of my favorite professors, whom I think I have had the great fortune of spending some time with, of studying under. And I think that's a spirit not only me, but so many of his thousands of his students across India, across the best B schools of India, and across many corporates and so on, resonate. We have Professor D.V.R. Seshadri with us. And the topic which we want to talk today is about business ethics and more broadly about life. As Bhumika was just saying, you know, a beautiful prayer that may all beings be happy. And Professor's life experience has been such a beautiful, deep research in this question of happiness, in this question of purpose of life, in this question of intelligence. I think that here, not only external research that he has studied and really grabbed that, but also through his life, the experiential research. So we are delighted to talk a bit about that. And before that, I hand it over and start the conversation just a little bit. So Since last 20 years, sir has taught at the best B schools of the country, including IIM Bangalore, IIM Ahmedabad, IIM Udaipur, and few more IIMs. And currently, for last few years, he has been part of Indian School of Business (ISB) at Hyderabad. The courses which he teaches span from business to business marketing, which is one of the most popular courses which all the PGP B school students love, to courses on leadership, courses on rediscovering yourself and life and so on, which we'll hear a bit more about. And before he stepped into this teaching field, academically he has studied, he's also studied at the best institutions one can go to, and he started at IIT Madras, and then he has studied at University of California, and then IIM Ahmedabad, and after that he has spent 15 years in various corporate settings, from large corporates, public sectors, to small scale, medium scale, family size, family businesses, and last 10 of those years were as CEO. But as we'll hear more in this conversation, that a significant turn of events and experiences, which include extreme ups and downs, got him to come out of that career and reinvent himself, and also start a deep research and spiritual journey about understanding and reinventing life and his role in the world. So we are very grateful, Professor, and I say this on behalf of so many students whom we have taught, and they have felt so attracted and so moved, not by what you have taught, but the, you know, some glimpses of what we have been able to receive of how you have lived your life. So very grateful for that, and we are looking forward to hear a bit more on that. Thank you, sir. Welcome. And I want to start our conversation, sir, with you know, this question of happiness. And and I was recently seeing one of the talks, which you had a beautiful talk called DNA of Happiness. It was a 2-hour talk on YouTube. You had given it ISB. And I was really appalled at the way at what you said at the end of the talk. And I want to bring that up. It was a visual which I have not been able to shake off from my mind since then. But I want to use that as a frame to get into this question of happiness. And you said something like about human condition and human life. And we just try to describe it in a not as good as you way, but I'll hand it over to you then. And you said that human life is something like, imagine a dark, scary night, and you're walking, a man is running in the jungle, very scared, and suddenly he's running and he falls into a pit, into a well in the ground, and it's raining and it's lightning and it's thunderous. And somehow, instead of falling down to the well, he is caught. He finds himself caught in a strong creeper. And he is just lurking down. He's hanging upside down in the creeper. And you can see the pythons and the scorpions at the bottom of the well, and just waiting that he will come down and they will devour they will devour the man. And the elephants running at the top, helter skelter, shouting, all scared. So it's a really I think scary environment. And just at that time they see that a rat is actually nibbling down the creeper, so it's just a matter of time before you lose that last bit of support also, and you fall down. And so it's a really scary situation. And then at the same time you see that there's a honeycomb just above your mouth, and from that honeycomb some drips of honey are, you know, coming down, and you see those drips of honey coming down, and somehow you totally tend to forget that the deep mess you are in, and you're just trying to, you know, move your head here and there, that can I catch that drop of honey. So that you said is sort of essentially the human condition, which is quite a gory image, I would say, quite a scary image. I would like to ask you first that, you know, what makes you think so? What are some sort of experiences which have informed your thinking, which have informed your perception that life is like not a very comfortable, warm swimming pool, but maybe a much more difficult well to navigate, dangerous well?
So firstly, Rohit, I thank you sincerely for a wonderful introduction. I'm really happy to be on this show, and it's nice to connect after almost 6 years at IIM Bangalore. With regard to your particular question, and you did phenomenal justice to the description that I had done in that talk. And this, I picked up from somewhere, it's not my original. But when I read it, it was resonated so much with me that I said, this is really what it is. So the fact of the matter is, we human beings keep looking for happiness here and there. And all the time we are running. And anytime we get some trace of happiness, it lasts for a while. You know, maybe I get a promotion, maybe I get an increment, maybe I marry, and so on. And then it goes back to, so this whole thing about life is very, very temporary bouts of happiness. Somebody might be lucky to have it as a continuum so that there is no break in the happiness and he dies, which is he's a blessed fellow. But many people, and I deal with, I will say in the academic world that I entered 20 years back, would have met more than 20,000 students because I was simultaneously engaged with multiple IIMs. And behind all the facade of bonhomie and happiness or smiles, there is tremendous amount of insecurity. And I went through that hellish period for almost 17 years when my corporate career got derailed abruptly. And therefore, through that journey, I concluded that actually it is exactly what you said, that we are just turning our head, bringing out our tongue, trying to catch that one drop and then salivate on it for a couple of minutes before the reality hits you again. In the case of human life, maybe you salivate on that happiness for 6 months, 1 year, till inevitably conflicts come because of incredible egos that clash and so on. And therefore, I came to a very drastic conclusion, which basically is that there is no happiness, zero happiness outside in the world. If you find so-called happiness, it's very temporary, and all the happiness is within. And so that has been the journey for almost, I will say now, 25 years and counting, including during the turmoil period. So to put a short answer to your question, my life experiences, talking to more than 20,000 students, everyone, you just scratch the surface a little bit and they will literally start crying that their world is full of so many woes and problems. And that my experience plus this interaction with students, I'm talking about students, not necessarily just PGP. These are people who are senior executives in companies. And all of them have a bag of angst in their heart. And that brought me to the conclusion that there is zero happiness outside. It might sound very, very drastic, but that's my firm conclusion. And all the happiness is within. So don't even look for happiness outside. This is my conclusion, if I may say.
Wow. So can you talk a little bit about your experiences, which especially on the personal front, because you said that your corporate career at some point drastically came to an abrupt halt. Can you talk about some of those difficult experiences or some of the experiences of pain or suffering which have guided you towards this kind of an understanding?
Absolutely. So actually, I had a dream run after my IIM Ahmedabad FPM. It was a dream run. I joined Madras Refineries. I was the blue-eyed boy of the managing director, Mr. Deenadayalu. Had very rapid rise. Actually, I got an entry point which was in a public sector unthinkable. And after that, I was put as project manager for an 8-member team in Houston for writing some software code. And so it was wonderful. But somewhere I was getting restless that life is beyond a nice, secure job. So I went into uncharted territory of joining a family business of 4 brothers, 3 sisters, husbands. And they were my relatives. In fact, one of the brothers was my father-in-law in drugs and pharmaceuticals. In retrospect, was it a foolish move and so on? I don't want to even comment about that because many of these moves are karmic. There's a lot of karmic, and I'm a strong believer that there is this karma force acting. Otherwise, if I continued in the public sector, I would have probably retired as a very senior fellow in Indian Oil Corporation type of organization. But after 5 years, I got itchy and I left into uncharted course, joined this family business. And right from the day start, I found a lot of friction between the brothers and sisters, husbands, and therefore the whole families were engulfed in this mess. And I was one of them, being the son-in-law of one of the brothers. And that taught me that what's all this about? You know, we're supposed to be all related and then we're just sharpening our knives. So that experience was about 2-3 years. And then I, in an attempt to escape from that toxic environment, I took a position as a managing director of a company in Gujarat, making compact discs. And that was again 7 years of hell. The first promoter was a guy from US who promised to bring the required money, but did not. And those 4 years, I was just essentially twiddling my thumbs, waiting for small trickles of money from the US. It was an 80 crore project in those days, or 100 crore. And I would get installments of 10 lakhs, 5 lakhs, and so on. And that drove me up the wall that how do I, all the money that was coming was essentially for salaries to keep the flock together. I'd made huge promises to people to join this company. Some of them were well established in multinationals. And then I sold them a dream story. And there again, I saw tremendous greed of the first promoter, who ended up in a jail in Wisconsin for some previous frauds. Then I went with hat in hand to again find a new promoter. And that guy was somebody in Chennai. And he was the great-grand son-in-law of some very big business empire. But they had distanced themselves from him because of his maverick ways. And I didn't have a clue because these were pre-internet era. So today, if I just go to the internet and check out somebody, I would know his entire horoscope in no time. But this was 97, where internet was not still in vogue. So it was a leap of faith. I looked at him as a savior for a sinking ship and brought him on board. And right from the word go, he was also very, very selfish. And those 7 years put me as close to hell as possible. I was slogging it out big time, hoping to build that company. Brought a lot of people, and because of the project not moving forward, people exited from the company, obviously for better prospects and so on. And I was just having like a boy in a burning deck, struggling to keep it going. Maybe in retrospect, it was foolish to be so emotionally attached, but I was so intricately connected with that project that I thought this project will live with me or it will die, and with that, I will die also. That was the extent of emotional connect with that project. And that was probably in retrospect foolish, but life is all about learning lessons. And then one fine day, as it was moving forward and it started some production, the new promoter, the guy in Chennai, came up with an obnoxious demand. I remember the date, it was on 3rd of April 2000, saying he's in deep trouble. His company secretary called me from his corporate headquarters and said, the boss needs you to facilitate 60 crores. And I told him at that time I had been pushed up enough up the wall. So I said, you will have it on my dead body. And within 24 hours, I was ousted from the position. A letter was issued that I will not have anything to do with the banks who are lenders. I will not have anything to do with employees, I will not have anything to do with customers. Essentially, I was defanged within by a stroke of a letter, and I was had no option but on 4th April to exit. And here I was, 7 years of incredible exertions, running like a mad dog all over the world to raise money and keep the project somehow on the track. And there were times when there were deep privations. There was no salary to myself, but I ensured the salaries were paid to all the employees on the first working day of each month. And the family went through hell because they saw me just so stressed out. And somebody advised me in the last stages before my exit that what are you doing with your life? You can do a lot more. And that set me thinking. But anyway, the inevitable happened. The chairman came and ousted me. Next day, that is on 4th April, he came to Gandhinagar where I was living. The project was there and I was just fired. And by then I had actually signed personal guarantees for 40 crores, bank loans. I'd taken personal loans of 110 lakhs, hoping to put it in the company. And then, you know, one day it will become big, and this dreams that this money will become a huge pile, which I can use for, you know, my own venture. There were a lot of mistakes I made, but regardless of that, there was huge learnings. And here I was on the street, no job, nothing, and huge liabilities. And you can imagine the type of pressure it put on the family. And this whole saga continued from 93. And by the time I could come out clean out of this, it was 2009. So all these, it was almost 17 years, led me to conclude that there's absolutely no, not an iota of happiness in the outside world. And by the way, I was a diehard atheist right from 1978, when I went off to US as a kid of 20 and a half years, because the world I thought was revolving around my hand. I went to a good institute, IIT Madras, nice life in California and so on. And then steep rise in the public sector. So all the right doors were opening without even knocking. So somewhere when I landed in San Diego in California, I said, there's no bloody God, I am God. You know, that arrogance. And by about 97, I said, bachao, bachao. I was getting so badly shaken up that it was more a surrender, his help from some higher power. And by the time I was out on the streets with no job, it was very clear that there is some higher power guiding this destiny. And slowly my antenna opened up to that power, and it's work in progress. So that's the journey which prompted me that bahar kuch nahi hai, sab andar hai. So for me, it was quite an incredible journey, because 20 years of atheist, although I was born in a middle-class, God-fearing family. So God-fearing to atheist, once I was let loose in San Diego, to, you know, begging God for some, you know, solace from all the ramming that I was getting, to finally being at peace with myself.
Wow, sir. And, you know, I have heard some, I have some glimpses from your journey. So I would like to bring that up, is that many times in this difficult phase in business which you were going through, there were many places, there were many points in time where you could have the easy way out. Like you could sort of do something unethical or something which does not align with your value system, and sort of escape a lot of what you're saying is the hardships which came your way. Was that so? And could you talk a little bit about that? And the context also why I ask this is, I think as students and as young professionals or like any person in their lives, I think always has this kind of situations, right? That they see that there's something which their heart tells us to do for values, but there's something else, you know, your mind tells that I can make a quick gain here or there, or this is the way things happen in business, so I have to be practical. So any reflections on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have delved deep into this, and I will be happy to share this. If I'm alive and talking to you today, it is simply because nobody, not even God, can point one finger to me and say that one paisa that was not mine, I have usurped wrongly. This is a reality. And that is what has protected me. Let me give you a few examples. In the dog days of the first promoter of the project, that NRI guy who was Chicago based, and you know, he was not sending money, but he was blowing money left, right and center and swindling. He had a finance CFO fellow, and he had a CEO. There was no need for that. It was just a collection club of getting money from the US NRI investors, doctors primarily, who were well-heeled in those days, and then channel it here. But instead, he went on a splurge. He took up an office in 97th floor of Sears Towers. You know, that is, and a whole floor. And then I was just sending messages. Those days, there was no email. And I used to send fax and say, bachao yaar, we don't have money for salaries. And he would send 2 lakhs, 3 lakhs, and so on. And in desperation, I made a trip to Sears Towers, met him there, stayed at his house. And the guy had the gumption to say, okay, let's go and have a drink And he took me to the 89th floor or something. And the Sears Tower, Chicago is a windy city, so the Sears Tower sways almost 20 feet each way. It's quite a sight, you know. It's built to withstand those winds. So 89th floor we went, I think, and the guy started ordering some whiskey. He said, would you like to have a drink? And in those days, I used to drink like a fish. So I said, sure. And then each drink was costing like $80, $100. And the guy had three or four, I had similar. And the bill was close to $1,000 with some snacks. And I said, this guy is blowing money left, right, and center. And he had a battery of people. It was just supposed to be a collection club to collect money and send here. You could have done it with one simple clerical person. But and then I later learned, much later, that he had actually collected almost $7, $8 million. He and his CEO and CFO, all of them swindled. And so that was something which was pretty scary to watch. And here I was twiddling my thumbs and just waiting for some mana from the sky. So this went on, and then the next promoter was equally berserk. He was supposed to be a Harvard MBA and IIT Bombay BTech, and very, very sophisticated. Of course, I was desperate for a promoter, and therefore I just went without doing too much due diligence, except Harvard MBA and a great grandson-in-law of some major organization or business group in India. So with these things, I saw a repeat of that. And that is where I came to the conclusion, what's all this about? It really, really hit me very hard that this is something berserk. Coming back to your question about ethics, in the first promoter, that is 93 to 97, somewhere in 95, 96, these guys were on a binge raising money left, right, and center from investors across the world, mostly NRIs. And I was called to Manchester and Birmingham and London to be there as a face to show for potential investors. And these guys, their CFO and CEO were there and making grand statements that we're going to put up this plant, the world's greatest CD plant, blah, blah, blah. And therefore you open your purse strings and, you know, subscribe. And the premium, this was private placement, it was going up and up and up. It was crazy, like for a 10 cents, or I don't remember those figures now, or 1 cent share, they were selling it at $30, something like that, inflating the whole thing. And I was sitting at the corner with a quizzical look and saying, what the hell are they talking about? There's nothing on the ground. And these guys took their architectural drawings, made some 3D type of animation, and then presented it as the factory is running. And so I was sitting with totally lost. And next day, and then the CFO and CEO saw me hobnobbing during the dinner with the potential investors. And they knew that things are not going the way they wanted, because I was whispering to them, to the potential investors, there is nothing on the ground for you to really invest. So next day morning, I was called for breakfast and told, look, we don't want you to be sucking the hind tits, whatever, that's an American expression in those days. And we want you to be wealthy. So just name any bank anywhere in the world and we'll remit you $1 million. That was a wake-up call for me. What the hell is happening? And I just politely said, I'm quite happy with whatever. In those days, I was getting a measly salary of 25,000 because there was no money in the company per month. And then there was a frantic calls from one gentleman, an NRI doctor in Boston, saying, I have put almost $1 million in the company. What's happening? And he connected to me. So I told the CEO and CFO, hey, what do we do with this guy? He's frantically calling. Then the CEO said, oh, don't bother. We have removed him from our board. That is the parent company in US. It was all a shell company. Then he was literally weeping on the phone saying, I've raised money from all and sundry people, including relatives and friends, and I'm in deep trouble. So I said, okay, I'll go to Boston. And these people were very annoyed. And I met him at Boston. He was just crying like a baby. So, and then there was all sort of incentives to take money from that group. And also the next group, this fellow from MBA from Harvard, all sort of inducements. But the thing that kept me sane is not one naya paise that was mine. When that was not mine, I put my hand on. And that's what saved me. I'll go fast forward a bit, but because I don't want to go into the gory details. But again, anyway, after that Boston, I went to this promoter who was in Chicago. And next day he was going to be put in jail. So he was very cool. And he offered me a bunch of drinks as usual and said, let's have a good time. And next morning he was supposed to be reporting to some penitentiary in Wisconsin. This is when I said people can lie so much. And these fellows were lying to the board that the chairman, that is this fellow, could not come to India for the board meetings simply because he was hauled up in a racially discriminatory case and he's sorting it out. So what I'm saying is there were a bunch of lies were so many and they just blew the daylights out of me. Okay, so fast forward to 2004, April. I was asked to pack up from the company, as I told you, within 24 hours notice. And after that, the banks, several customers, some of the good employees were saying, what happened? This fellow is quite a clean guy. Why did he get sacked? And then the stories were rampant on me that he swindled money. Some of my ex-colleagues also said he swindled a lot of money. He made money on chairs. He made money on AC and so on. And surprisingly, and the banks were very, very paranoid. So they put a concurrent auditor. And when the concurrent auditor came, there was absolutely no files to show. They were all disposed of or hidden away. So the concurrent auditors also wrote that we think that this DVR Seshadri has swindled a lot of money. I was at my wit's end. What's happening? So the type of games that go on here are so vicious, we cannot imagine. I was dealing with crocodiles and jackals of the highest amount of viciousness. But luckily, it was just a stroke of good luck that I escaped all those things, because I think the banks knew that I was a guy who was literally living hand to mouth at a personal level. Most of the time, my salaries were getting delayed. So it was, if anybody was getting affected, it was my core family. And of course, it created a lot of tsunamis inside the family that what have you done with your life and blah, blah, and all that. And lo and behold, in August, see, the whole cycle of karma comes full turn. By October of 2000, 7 months after I was kicked out, the chairman was hauled up and thrown in Chennai jail, this Harvard MBA fellow. And if I fast forward to 20 years, yesterday I came across another note, a press release, which said in June 2018, that is almost 20 years after this whole episodes, he's back in jail on RI, rigorous imprisonment, for 5 years and had to pay 20 lakhs. Not only that, his company secretary is in jail for 3 years. His finance CFO is in jail, the group finance CFO. So my advice to everybody, youngsters, is absolutely zero compromise on ethics. Absolutely zero compromise. And what stood me good ground is my own upbringing. When I was a kid, maybe 5 years and onwards, all my siblings and I were told that my grandfather, who was a munisif, that is a collector of small taxes in villages, he was a very orthodox fellow, so he never used to go to, there were no hotels in those days, by the way. So when he goes to a new village, somebody will host and he would eat a lunch. And under the mat, when he goes away, after thanking them, they would find some 6 paise or 3 paise, that was the currency. As he didn't want debt to be accumulated in his karmic balance. So he would just insert 3 paise or whatever and go off. And when they lifted the mat, they would see this money. So those were the value frame with which I was brought up. And that stood me in good stead with all this inducements, even I will say very aggressive way of pushing me to places where I could have really messed up my life. If I hadn't been so upright, I will guarantee you one thing, I would have been in jail along with the chairman even now. That's the reality of it. And today technology has made it almost 100% certainty that if you just swerve from the ethical part, even an iota, sooner or later you will be caught. Because technology, you're leaving footprints all over the place. What saved me was not one paisa I had taken. But then, I'm not saying I'm some Virgin Mary type of, pure person. In the process of running business to deal with the Gujarat government officials, and I'm not afraid of saying this, or for essentially that, to get some permissions or the other, we had to pay money. And obviously, this cannot be discussed with everybody in the organization. So there would be some kickbacks taken from air conditioning contractor like Voltas, and they will not do it because being a high-profile company, through their distributor or some XYZ fellow, he'll come and give some money. And that back-to-back used to go to the recipients of this bribe. So while I have not personally taken anything to run the business in those days, unfortunately, I had to do some murky things. But even that in retrospect is avoidable. So my advice is absolutely no taking, no giving, zero. If it means that you have to delay the project, so be it, is what I would say. But over the years, this is what has kept me and kept my sanity. And I could absolutely stay out of any troubles. And the justice takes a full circle. And, the guy that I was dealing with, one fellow in US was thrown in jail. The other fellow here is thrown in jail. And not just him, but all the people who suck up to him and do at his bidding. And this is the reality of many businesses, especially small, medium, and maybe large, unless they are 24 karat gold in terms of corporate governance like the Tata Group, which are very rare. As senior people, we get suckered into doing so many unsavory things. Boss ne bata diya karo. In the heat of the moment, because you say, yaar, main kya karun? Bacche pad rahe hai. I cannot afford to leave this job. If I leave from Bangalore, where will I go? And in that, if you succumb, you're writing your own death warrant professionally and even probably physically. So I hope that longish answer to your short question, zero compromise. And here I would like folks to actually read Clayton Christensen's book, How Will You Measure Your Life? Where one of the things, four things he talks about, how will you find fulfillment in your profession? How will you find fulfillment in your relation with your spouse? How will you find fulfillment in your relation with children? And the last one, and this is a Harvard professor, very, very internationally known, how will you stay out of jail? So what he says is there's a Lakshman Rekha dividing unethical and ethical. And most people are ethical. It's not that we are all crooks. But once in a while, there's a temptation, like happened to Rajat Gupta. He's a brilliant man, a great guy. But one small temptation, and he crossed that Lakshman Rekha. And he said, probably he rationalized, is ek bar karunga, bahut paisa milega. But that was the beginning of his end. And we all know that story. So what Clayton Christensen Saab says is, stay far away in the ethical boundary. Imagine it's India-Pakistan line of control or something. If you want to build a house, don't build it on the edge or just say, okay, nobody's watching. Let me go and grab some land in Pakistan. That is a sure way to go into hell professionally. So stay deep inside the Lakshman Rekha in the ethical side. And I would encourage folks to read up Clayton Christensen's beautiful, easy to read book.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir. It's so inspiring. I think what you're saying about the strength which you had always to choose values and honesty, despite the hardships or the lures which you had in front of you. But sir, at least from my experience, or if I see the general world today, which is a bit different, I guess that there's a significant proportion of us which will perhaps not have had situations till yet where there's a choice between something legal and something drastically illegal. So for example, if it's about when I'm joining a B-school and I'm making my resume maybe a wrong, incorrect, untrue point there about my activities or my resume will not going to be land me in jail. So anyway, but I think And even, for example, when we start as professionals, then, you know, something which I think a lot of us currently ask ourselves, struggle with personally, is say, even if you, because you teach marketing, something like marketing, right? Like this question of honesty comes there as well, that, you know, unless I really pitch my product as something, the best product which you can ever have, it's difficult to, in this age of competition, to convince consumers to buy that. But then I also have this value of honesty, saying that, you know, why can't I be honest? So it comes across in terms of the products or services which we are trying to sell. It comes across in a way when we take the resume example of trying to sell your own self or have your own brand and position. So I think in every moment, we encounter that in small ways, not in big ways, like, you know, maybe stealing some money or embezzling some money from some bank account. But in these small ways, I think these decisions are something which all professionals grapple with on a day-to-day basis. So what are some thoughts on that?
Rohit, I will say that it's a zero compromise, zero tolerance on your own. You're the judge of it, and your conscience is the judge, because sooner or later, these will haunt you. In that sense, I would like to recall the sage advice of Mr. N.R. Narayan Murthy, founder of Infosys or co-founder, where he said the softest pillow is a clean conscience. I think something to that effect. You know, so we want to sleep in a very comfortable way, not have these ghosts hovering around. When will somebody knock at the door and say, dude, your time starts now, get into the cellar, that is the jail. You know, so I do understand where you're coming from, that fudging a resume is not that criminal a thing. To that, I will say that, you know, just now before I came to office for this call, I was bumping into a bunch of PGP students at ISB, and they're all concerned because the corona and all the economy and stuff like that. And all of them, there's a comparison, pecking order. And I told that guy, look, he was looking very forlorn, one of the guys with whom I engaged in a longish conversation. I said, life is a marathon, not a 100-meter stint. So focus on developing your skills, competencies, value frame, and so on. And that will take you in the marathon as a steady runner, rather than to sprint hoodwinking somebody or the other and getting a temporary gain. That's not going to last, because those habits die hard. And once we are used to shortcuts, we keep doing it. And once the bosses in the organization know this fellow is malleable and bendable, they're going to use you as a conduit for doing all unsavory things. But once they know that you will not break, you will not bend, then, okay, if it means that you don't get promoted, so be it. Find other ways to engage yourself, like what you're doing, volunteering, and they're far more fulfilling. You might keep a day job, may not be going at a racehorse in terms of tenure. So find meaning, larger purpose, rather than these short bursts of getting gratification because you please some boss or this or that. This is the first thing that I would like to say, that this has to be a zero tolerance, because it's not sustainable. Having said that, I will say I myself was a, bent inadvertently during my IIM Ahmedabad days, and I'm not wanting to project that I am some totally 24 karat clean guy. I did do something which made me reflect a lot after that. One was interaction. I was running around the campus in those days, and I saw a beautiful flower, and it was opposite to some bunch of faculty quarters. I plucked that flower. Instinct was, it's good, let me pluck it. And gently there was a voice from the balcony back. I looked up, and it was the founding director of IIM Ahmedabad, highly respected Professor Ravi Mathai. And he just told me in such a soft voice, young man, don't you think the flower is more beautiful on the plant than in your hands? That's all. I dropped the flower then and there and ran for my life. I just muttered some sorry and ran away. This was very soon after I joined, probably 81. By then he had stepped down, considerably before that. That was a defining moment for me, that nothing we are supposed to take which is not ours first. But having said that, I got married in 82 June, I think, and I was a student earning a stipend of 500 rupees. Those were very financially difficult days, but probably the happiest days, carefree. And my wife was studying at Chennai, and in early marriage, you're all palpitating for being with a spouse all the time and so on. So she had long stints abroad, in Chennai, and I would just pine like a Devdas and literally get into emotional upheavals. And there was an assignment in some course, I think it was related to information systems. And I just could not put my brain to address that assignment. And so in the 11th hour, I just requested a friend to please share the assignment, and I literally copied it. And I thought it'll go unnoticed. Mm. Unfortunately, the teaching assistant noticed almost 90 or 100% overlap. And he raised it up to the system. And I was hauled up to the dean, academic or dean. In those days, there was only one dean, and said, "What are you doing? You're supposed to be a doctoral student. And what is all this nonsense? We could throw you out," and so on. That was a second defining moment. Although I prided myself in saying I'm 24 karat gold. Of course, by then I had not been tested. By the way, this was pre my corporate experience. I had not been tested to the hilt. But these were the young days of brashness and so on. And for me, that was the first and last time that I crossed the Lakshman Rekha on these type of matters, pilfering somebody's intellectual property, pilfering some money and so on. And I was deeply, deeply shaken up by that remonstration or admonition by the dean. He was a wise man. So he said, "I'll let you off the hook, but next time any such thing happens, you will be out of this institute." So this is how we keep kissing that Lakshman Rekha now and then, and we have to stay far, far in the safe zone. So after that, I'm over cautious on intellectual property. We keep writing some papers, so quote the references properly and so on.
Yeah, beautiful.
So my zero compromise on anything that is, whether it's intellectual property or whatever it is, zero compromise is what is needed. Even if it means losing the job, so be it. Maybe you will discover something you're more passionate about rather than sticking on to a thankless job where your heart is not there. Hmm. And also choose your company wisely. There's no need to run after money. I also believe very, very strongly that you will not get one paisa before you are due to get it from the higher power. You will not get one paisa, 1 millisecond before you are due to get it. So why palpitate for it? Focus on building your skills, learnability, and uprightness, values, and so on, which in the long haul will be far more holistically remunerative, not just the bank balances. They're very irrelevant. That's only one facet of multiple dimensions of what it means to have a richness of life.
Beautiful. I just want to take a moment to remind our listeners that they can send in their any comment or any reflections or any questions for Sir via the form on the question form on the live stream page, or by sending an email at ask@servicespace.org. Thank you. That's beautiful, sir. And what I'm hearing you say is that be focused on values, priorities, your values, not only because there's a chance of getting caught externally, because this is more for your inner growth and more for your inner development and your conscience that is the softest pillow. Okay, beautiful. And so just to stay a bit more on the marketing, because one of the popular courses you teach is on marketing. And so I think from the way the business world is progressing, I think the businesses are becoming bigger, much more powerful, much more technology enabled. Like there's big data, there's artificial intelligence, where it is we live in a world today that Google or any large company for that matter knows much more about you than you know about yourself. At least for me, that's true. Because so in this day, how are you seeing that? What would you think that ethical marketing today, according to you, looks like? If they're like marketing managers watching this talk right now, how would you frame it? That what does ethical marketing in today's world look like?
Rohit, thank you for reminding me that question. You had actually raised that question earlier. I somehow skipped it. But I have some very clear position on that. Firstly, thankfully, I teach B2B marketing, not B2C marketing. And in B2B marketing, because the buyer is very rational and well-informed, the chances of a sales guy or a marketing whiz going and fooling the buyer is almost impossible because he's got all the tons of data with him. So you are forced to be honest. And also relationships are very important there. And therefore, if you mess up one place by hoodwinking the customer, your reputation will go for a toss once for all. And because these are all accounts which you hang on for a long time, for many years and so on. But to the answer to your question, I want to say very, very, very affirmatively, I would like to muster every iota of energy that I have to make this statement that you, in the long run, whether you're B2B or B2C, you can succeed only by raising your level of consciousness as a sales guy. This might come as a googly to a lot of people. They'll say, what the hell is this guy talking about? But I would urge you to actually, for those who are interested in this topic of how can I be ethical in a marketing and sales context, please note down and read a book by David Hawkins called Letting Go, The Pathway to Surrender. He's an MD in psychiatry and a PhD in psychiatry. And about 25 or 30 years back, he brought SQ into the center stage, spiritual quotient. Till then, people were saying, well, your success depends on your intelligence, IQ, and then EQ, emotional intelligence, and so on. That's a big topic. We can spend 1 hour discussing those. But I think he brought success in life squarely is quite proportional to SQ, how much. And he created a beautiful scale of 0 to 1,000. On the bottom is feelings, emotions like shame, guilt, anger, greed, and so on. And then as you move up, you get into courage, neutrality, and so on. And when you further move up, it is peace, love, and enlightenment. So if you take his entire spectrum, 0 to 1,000, and this is not some wild, statements. These are in the journals of psychiatry, he has really established this scale of consciousness. And all of us humans who inhabit the planet are at various stages of the scale of consciousness. When I was booted out of the company in 2000, I was probably on that 0 to 1,000 at a level of 20 or 30. Shame, guilt, these were the primary feelings. 20,000 times a day, the feeling will come, I am useless, I am a failure, and so on. And it has been a long journey to move up on the scale of consciousness. Now, what does it relate to Rohit's question? He beautifully demarcates three, he has given a spectrum of 25 different emotions, starting from shame, guilt, greed, anger, and so on, all the way up to peace and enlightenment. So there's a huge spectrum. He divided it beautifully into three compartments. The first one third roughly is what is called inertial state of human existence. The next one is called energetic state. And the last one is called peaceful state, when you're at the level of peace, joy, love, and so on. And so long as a sales guy, you're operating in the inertial state, you really have to, all the time you will get only disappointments. You have to fool the customer and so on to get a sale. You may get 1 out of 10. You're spending a lot of energy, but getting nowhere. And so his advice is, can you focus on the inner journey and move yourself rapidly to the higher planes of consciousness to go into the next stage? Is the bucket is called energetic state. So inertial state, energetic state, peaceful state. So if you make that progress, it may happen over 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. And when you reach peaceful state, things just happen. You just have to lovingly picture something that this client will be my customer. This potential customer will turn into a loyal customer. You just have to picture it lovingly, because the way you talk, the way you body language, the way you communicate, the way you empathize with the customer, orders will just pour on you. By the way, young folks who are on this session, I'd like to say in the same way, he has come up with another beautiful correlation. In the inertial state, your worth to yourself and the world is based on what you have. That is called having. I got 5 Rolex watches. I've got a Mercedes car. I've got a penthouse in Bandra or wherever it is, overlooking the Arabian Sea. When you move to the energetic state, which is the middle bucket, it is doing. Nobody cares what you have. What are you doing? Like now, when I look at Rohit, he's doing extraordinary work, volunteering. He left a fancy PE job earning, I think, 7-figure salaries or 8-figure salaries. And one day he said, I had enough of this, and came into volunteering work. So that is doing. And I'm sure he has graduated to the next one, because he's been at this for a long time. Energetic state, say, he has moved into peaceful state. And so when you go to peaceful state, nobody cares what you have, what you do. It is just who you are. What are you as a being? So having, doing, being, very, very important. In the lower state of consciousness, lowest bucket, it's about having this or that, titles, this and that. Then nobody really cares. When you move into energetic state, it is about doing. And when you're in the highest states of consciousness, the last 1/3 bucket, starting from peace, joy, love, and enlightenment, it is about being. So if that is clear, one would focus upon raising up on the level of consciousness through a very, very solid inward journey. And a good starting point is pick up that book. It's available for 600 or so. Letting Go, The Pathway to Surrender by David Hawkins. And he's himself, he's no more, but he's operating at 700 to 1,000 on that scale, which is enlightenment. So the point, Rohit, I'm again emphasizing, is that if one is stuck with a company which is forcing you to do unethical things, sell untruth, peddle falsehood, once you're on this track of moving up on the levels of consciousness, you will not spend even 1 hour in that company anymore. You will resign. Dekha jayega. So if you focus on building your capabilities, dal roti kahin se milega. There's no need to be afraid. At the same time, I would also suggest keep your expenses low, because many times, and I've met so many students, I say they walk around like Devdas. In IIM Bangalore, I had people like vice presidents of top IT companies. They'll walk around like Devdas. And we used to get their profile, engineering, kahan se kiya, or education, number of years experience, current designation, last drawn salary. And I would accost some of these people and say, hey, dude, I saw that you're getting 75 lakhs. In those days, it was a lot. I'm talking 2003. Why are you working so forlorn? And he'll say, kya karun? I hate my job. I can't stand it. Then I say, why can't you quit? He says, nahin, nahin, main kya kar sakta hun? I have one house EMI in Karol Bagh, one house EMI in Brigade Road in Bangalore, one in Banjara Hills in Hyderabad, and the fourth one in Cuff Parade or something in Bombay. Then I say, you suffer. They will also say, every 6 months, I'm used to taking my family to New Zealand, Swaziland, Holland, Switzerland, and so on. So if you have calibrated your life to be so expensive, then you cannot really follow some of these. So it's a good idea to tone down your lifestyle to basically minimalist. Then your ability to take course corrections to thankless jobs is far, far better. I don't know if I'm making sense, Rohit, but if you just calibrate your life to be very, very swanky and profligate in money, then unless you get fed with that money, you cannot survive. And therefore, you end up getting conned into doing things that your conscience will not allow you. So 2 things take away from this: tone down your life expenses to a minimum. There's no problem in going to a normal school. You don't have to put your kid to a school that costs 25 lakhs a year. And in fact, many of the great Mahatmas we see around, like Dr. Abdul Kalam and Mr. Narayan Murthy, went to very normal schools. So the second is focus on moving up on the scale of consciousness, which is the inward journey.
Mm.
I hope it makes sense to you.
Yes, sir, it's true, I think, because like all of us have those questions in the, you know, various phases of life we are in. So that's, I think, very, very practical and relevant. And so, sir, one of the things which you're talking about is that actually the purpose of life, you're saying that is to move to higher consciousness and to actually understand that this nature of unhappiness or suffering and how can we be happy and discover our purpose and things like that. And you're also saying that by just conventionally going on this path of so-called mainstream success, where you just become big business leaders, but you're interacting with tens of thousands of students, where you just scratch the surface and you see that there's so much of unhappiness and things like that inside. So it brings me to a question about education and intelligence, that I think our education system today is making us excellent managers, maybe in companies, but it is actually not preparing us much for becoming more skillful and informed about these basic questions which we as humans face. And even, for example, you know, if I look at your courses at PGP, you teach B2B marketing. And when you engage with more senior professionals, like maybe 40 years of age, 35, 40, who have gone through 10, 15 years of corporate experience, who have seen those, all explored those pits and wells, then you teach courses of reinventing life and rediscovering life and so on. So it sort of breaks my heart that why do we have to go on this path of accumulation and running behind things which perhaps don't give us much satisfaction, don't give us much growth, and only like, is there like a minimum age limit to these things that, you know, you cannot engage in these questions or reflection about life before you are 45? So why are there not like much spaces as teachers, as education? Why do you think we are not promoting this inquiry?
I think that's a very valid question. It should actually happen in schools. It should happen in colleges. And in fact, this is the most important education that is needed, that the life skills of how do you keep sanity in a very, very turbulent world. But sadly, it's not happening. And least of all in MBA type of institutions, where these are pushed to the background. There are some scanty courses out of 30 courses a PGP might take. There is one a course that might be on these things like happiness or inner journey, if at all. And even there, the students cynically comment to the others who are taking it, yeah, yes, a globe course hai, or some bullshit course, you know. So you want to get a good grade, you go there. But asli MBA log will take courses on financial derivatives or AI or Python and its application to market research or whatever things, pricing strategies, and so on. So this is the tragedy of our times. So one thing is that this cannot be forced on anybody. There has to be a time that has to come. People have to be ripe. If I go and tell this Bhashan to my daughter, that you have daughters, I have two daughters, yeah, you have to spend time on yourself. They'll say, Dad, you keep those hobbies to yourself. We are leading fulfilled lives. Aap hamein khilao mat. So I think any amount of preaching to somebody will not have any benefit. The time has to come where they open up. For some people, at a very young age, they open up to these things and explore and then make rapid progress. And that is because of the karmic credit balances with which they are born from their previous lives. I'm a serious believer of the karma theory. So somebody is coming with serious credit balances, will get on to this, and suddenly he will say, hey, there's a deeper meaning of life and let me push on that and fire on all cylinders. But for most people, we have to go through our knocks, and then somewhere after being battered and bleeding all over the body, then you say bachao, bachao. And if you are lucky, then you find some asli directive, direction. That is a genuine path. Somebody who shows path, a genuine marg darshak. Because there are a lot of faltu marg darshaks also who are interested in your money and nothing more. And in their fame and numbers of followers and so on. But luckily across the world, not just in India, but across the world, there are Mahatmas. And if you really yearn for them, that is desire them very deeply, they will plonk into your life very, very miraculously. The good thing is, thanks to technology today, there are enough and more forums like what you are having, service space. So if somebody is highly disturbed, having no clue what to do with my life, sooner or later through WhatsApp or somebody will say, our service space must have. He will log in and say, hey, there is a way to discover meaning. And then the inner journey is important, which is what you also emphasize, right? So this was not possible in the past, but I think with technology being so pervasive, I'm very optimistic that in future, anybody who has problems would be able to come quickly to understand that bahar ek bhi boond sukh nahi hai, andar hi khajana hai. Like that story that you narrated about the honey dripping in the fellow upside down well. So once he catches that and starts this inner journey, he can be incredibly effective outside in his engagement with the world. Because your mind is not getting wasted and dissipated with all sort of nonsense thoughts. And you're able to bring the mind to absolute calmness through a variety of practices. So I would like to just make a small detour for those who are not familiar. There's a chief business officer of Google and Alphabet called Mohammad Gaudat. The short form is Mo Gaudat. And he wrote a beautiful book, Solve for Happy, about 6-7 years back or more maybe. Fairly recent book. So he was earning hundreds of millions of dollars in Google and Alphabet, but extremely miserable. He was living on the lap of opulence. But then he went back to the drawing board and said, what is happiness? And he came up with 5 states of thoughts. The first one is confusion, a state of confusion. Let's say you got a job between 2 companies, one in Dubai and one in Germany. Should I go to Germany? Should I go to Dubai? Dubai is close to my parents. I can fly back now and then. There is tax-free. Germany, I hear that it's very cold. There's also some talk that there is racism because of the pushback or whatever else it is. And there is heavy taxation. For example, should I choose this? Should I choose that? That is lowest state, confusion. A state of continuous negative thoughts is suffering. And that is the state in which I was for 17 years. 17. And then the state of thoughts difficult to handle. For example, I've done something terrible to somebody, swindled huge money, and that fellow died. Now, no matter what, I cannot make amends. It's over. And I will be living with that guilt for the rest of my life. And that will lead me to escape, go and get drunk or gamble or promiscuity or pornography, whatever else it is. So that is the third one. A state of continuous positive thoughts, like what Rohit Rajgaria may have. That leads to Abdul Kalam Sahab. Yes, I can make a difference. And till the last breath, he was engaging with students all over the country, saying, you can emulate me. There's nothing special. I'm like you. And he fired the imagination of so many people. The last one is a state of no thoughts, which is joy. So once again, bottom is confusion, continuous negative thoughts, suffering, state of thoughts I cannot handle is escape. Then state of mind where you have positive thoughts, continuous stream is happiness, and a state of no thoughts is joy. And that is the effort of all spiritual practice across religions, I dare say, that can you bring the mind to a screeching halt? Because the biggest enemy is not outside, it is within us. In the recesses between the 2 ears, the mind, where the all sort of crazy thoughts come, I'm useless, I'm good for nothing, that guy messed up my life, I'm a victim, why me? So many thoughts. This is the drama of life. From morning to night, recurring thoughts, negative thoughts keep coming. Usually they have a pattern. In my case, 17 years, I'm a failure was the thought pattern. Till I came across an incredible Mahatma And he literally held me by my little hand and pulled little finger and pulled me out of a sewage pit in which I was wallowing. So the power of the ability to embark on the inner journey is not to be underestimated. I would dare say that it's the most important work that each of us can do in our lives to accelerate the inner journey. The outer results will come happily. Whatever you deserve, you will get. Whatever you, when you move to peaceful state, whatever you set your mind on will happen miraculously. You don't have to really struggle. If I may go into first person experience, while in IIM Bangalore, I was based there, I was an adjunct faculty, which means I would get paid by course. And somebody told me, yaar, ISB mein ghus jao, they take care of faculty well. I tried for 8 years, this way, that way to enter. I was in the inertial state in those days, but they just like hitting a wall. And one fine day, about 7-8 years later, after a gap of 7-8 years, there was a call from the dean, hey, DVR, we want to recruit you. I had not even applied. You know, that is the beauty of it. And having come here, I find I have healed all lot of past wounds. I was battered and bleeding all over because of the financial mess I was in. So things just happen. Whatever you lovingly picture and desire happens to you once you start moving to the energetic and peaceful state and move out of the inertial state.
Thank you, sir. Sir, you're saying that, you know, the enemy is not outside, or the sort of development to be done is not outside but inside. And also, andari khazana hai, which is the riches are also inside. So can you share a little bit on how that has manifested in your life?
100%. I mean, today, I will say that I give so much importance to it that my entire travel schedule is around the practices that I do. And by God's grace, and by the way, I told you I was an atheist. Today, I'm in the spectrum. I know that even the next word will not come out of my mouth unless the higher power, infinite, wills it. Right now, I can drop dead on this keyboard and then Rohit will phone the ISB security. So that is the, we arrogate ourselves that we are the movers and shakers of this earth or cosmos. It's total rubbish. And of course, that higher power is not on some in heaven sitting on a throne attended by four beautiful women fanning and so on. That higher power, you know, so those are stories for mythology and so on. So they have their role, but the higher power is within. So I typically wake up at 4:30 or 4 if I have an early morning class, 3:30. And then it takes me an hour to get ready, attend to calls of nature and bath and blah, blah. And then I spend 3 hours almost uninterrupted. That's my me time. That time, no mobile, nothing. It's far away. By the way, also while sleeping, the mobile is far away. The last I look at the mobile is 1 hour before I sleep. Otherwise, all these toxic messages come that, you know, in Afghanistan, there is 200 people bombed out, or Iraq, or this or that. Mm-hmm. Why pollute our mind? There's enough pollution inside. No need to import external pollution. So, and I step out of the house, only 5 hours is my setup time. Then afternoon, I go and do some more practices. And night, I spend 1.5 hours. So without 5 hours, the day is not complete. And if Rohit came and said, yaar, do din ke liye band kar do na, no problem. I will give you 10 crores. I'll say, aapka 10 crore aap hi rakhiye. This is far more precious than, I cannot compromise on this even one day. So there's a whole lot. And what practices you do essentially culminate in, how do you quieten the mind and bring it to no thoughts? That's all the thing. All spiritual practices of the entire world, I believe, culminate in this. Not too many talk about it because it's too scary for a lot of people. Many will say, if I don't have thoughts, how can I survive? I will be a vegetable and so on. But in fact, you will be at your most powerful peak of work output, whatever you desire, according to your vision. And this is where the importance of life vision comes. Whatever you desire will just manifest absolutely by itself. Of course, you're putting the right effort in a meaningful way. But in an inertial state, the same effort, like it happened to me in that Gujarat factory, 7 years of hell, lot of effort, but zero result. So your ability to get maximum output for minimum input starts manifesting when you move to the higher planes of consciousness, when the mind is absolutely calm. You just have to think and it happens. But you do need to have a vision which is broader than me, mujhe 50 crore bank balance chahiye. That's all rubbish vision. So basically, you have to have a much bigger purpose. So how I defined my purpose, I wrote my first vision after sometime 2004 when I met the Mahatma who put me on this track and started pulling me out of the sewage pit, 2004 ke aas pass. That was the first time in my life. At that time, I was already pretty late in age 47 or something. It's too late to have a vision. So folks who are on this call, please write your vision here and now today. This weekend, abhi Republic Day aa raha hai, do din kafi hai. Start tentatively writing your vision. If you want, I can send a download of material to Rohit. He can forward to you on how do you write a vision. But so there it was about enhancing the quality of life of students. Before that, 2000 to 2004, I was teaching at IIM Bangalore. And my teaching used to be dense PowerPoint slides. I'll switch off the lights, turn my back to the audience and 200 words per slide. And then go on reading them. And the feedback used to be third rate. The dean of IIM called me and said, hey, DVR, I think you have to look for another job. That was how pathetic it was. And somewhere I thought, where is this leading? Corporate may failure, personal life may failure, academic may failure. Where do I go? Do I jump into that, one canal that is there in Bangalore? I forgot the name, which takes all the gandagi from Bangalore and dumps it somewhere. So that was the only recourse. So then I sat quietly under a tree and thought about life. And I realized the purpose of a teacher is not, especially in professional setups like ours, not to download whatever little wee bit of knowledge I know of B2B marketing on some unwilling heads of students. And I can guarantee you that somebody like Nipun or Rahul or Rohit know more of B2B than I have, because they've been learning through their job and so on. So instead, it is to address the quality of life of students. Can we enhance the quality of life of students? And when you take that, the same day I dropped the PowerPoint, now I'm known as a fellow who never touches a PowerPoint. So I'm called a walk, chalk, and talk faculty. So... So I just snoop down like an eagle. If somebody is sleeping, I'll come down. If Rohit is sleeping in the class, look eyeball to eyeball within 6 inches and say, kya samajh rahe ho, kya bhai, abhi batao, what did I say in the last 1 minute? And therefore, people are very, very alert. And then in between, I give some snippets of life, not in a very organized manner, that people see a lot of value. So now I've sort of come to age 63. And then I said, yeah, I've been teaching 20 years, 6-7 IIMs parallelly. I think I had taught in those 20 years what typical faculty anchored at one institute might teach in 5 lifetimes. So this is where, because I was going, living off the suitcase from one IIM to the other on a, it was a circuit from Ahmedabad, Bangalore, Ahmedabad, Udaipur, long, and then back again. So this was crazy. And then in between, so many companies. So now I said, bahut ho gaya ye teaching. So now, and by the way, the other thing I learned was keep the class at ease, no stress. I tell everybody, look, folks, all of you deserve an A. If I had the ability, you would all get an A in my course. Unfortunately, I lose my job if I do that, because the institute wants a force fitting normalized curve, 25% A's, 45% B's, and 30% C and D. So, but don't worry, these grades are, and I usually open my class with this statement. I don't know, Rohit, if you remember, that progress in life is inversely proportional to the grades that you get in class. So that puts a lot of people at ease and say, yaar, to humko C milne se bhi kuch khatra nahi hai. So, Which I think is true, because a lot more life skills are needed to really keep in this crazy VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous world. Lot more skills are required than just some silly grades, which we will forget even after the course is over. Yeah, kya grade mila? Kaunsa course? Oh no, you took that B2B. Liya kya? I don't remember taking B2B marketing. That is how our memories are. So, and now last 1 month, I've been thinking, what do I do? What's the new vision? And suddenly I realized that I can now set the residual years of my life on, based on my life experience, on two major projects, which I'm embarked on, three actually. One is Equitable Healthcare Access Consortium, which is how do you make the poorest of poor guy to get the same healthcare as a rich person? And this was motivated by what L.V. Prasad Eye Institute, one of the top eye institutes in the world, based in Hyderabad, has done, and Arvind Eye Care, which is the most well-known. They've done in eye care. But what if I'm a poor fellow who has a heart problem or a liver problem or cancer? So can we take lessons from that and push it? So this is something I was involved with many other Mahatmas about 2 years back. And now I said the world is fast changing, because every year you see the news. When I was in Bangalore, this is the hottest year in the last 100 years. But now I've shifted to Hyderabad. This is the hottest year in the last 30 years. Aray, bhaiya, give me a break. If this is the hottest year every year, where is it going to go? Goodness. So I've now hitched my wagon with some great folks who have done lifelong research, and we have launched one, Climate Healers Academy, which is giving me purpose for the next residual years, maybe 10, 15, 20, whatever, till I have the ounce of energy. And the other is Life Healer Academy, because as I told you, a lot of kids are going through hell. Kids means even 40-year-old people, maybe the marital discord. And I went through enough of that because of my professional problems. It spilled over into the personal world also. And then professional insecurities, children, anxieties, health anxieties, mother-in-law anxiety, this, that, and the other. So we are launching one Life Healers Academy. And the nice thing about a place like ISB is they give you the space to do whatever you want, so long as you go and plonk into the scheduled course and teach without, absenting yourself, and write some decent research output comes out. So this this is where I am, that all this leads to figuring out what's your life purpose. And it is an iterative process for youngsters. They may iterate every 6 months, 1 year, till they zero in visibility for about 10 years. In my case, the visibility is more like 20 years because of the gray hair that I have.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, sir. That, I think brings us to my last question, which is something which you are already sharing. And I actually missed it sharing in the beginning, because that's one thing which I really appreciate about you, and so many of us do, that I think one thing which many of us have felt is that through your work, I think the even when you're teaching, which is sort of a role of authority, that you are like senior and the students are junior. But what I at least felt that is the heart of service which you bring, that here is an opportunity to actually support the students in any way which I can. And that I think has beautifully manifested in the kind of emotional support or the spiritual support which so many students have found from you, and through your courses also, that many people have been helped to sort of change career paths and maybe to take a role which is more aligned to their purpose, find something in service, help the poor people, commit full time to serving the society. Even you were talking about failures, that we all seem to achieve so much, but then life throws in a googly, and then you find yourself at where you really start feeling like a failure. And your courses and your engagement with the students has helped students so many times in coming out of these difficult phases. And now you're also involved with, you've for a long time been involved with many nonprofit organizations, also social service organizations like Arvind, Dhan, EHAC, which you just mentioned, and a few others. So I would like to understand that what is the So we are typically operating in a very mainstream business context, in a business world. But what is the role of values like service, kindness, compassion in your life today?
For the benefit of everybody who is on this talk, I will say, one, the primary purpose of life is your internal journey. Let's not fool around with that. The internal enhancement. But complementary to that is the whole issue of how can I be of service to the larger society. That includes not just people, but includes trees, animals, everybody. So if we sort of, these two, actually there's no conflict. And once we do this, we suddenly find that we have been able to release a lot of human energy that is within us to do so many things simultaneously. And people get stunned, hey, how are you able to do all this? But suddenly you realize that all infructuous engagements, going and talking gossip with XYZ, or going and looking at Facebook or LinkedIn or this or that and wasting time unnecessarily, all those are jettisoned. And you are, of course, focusing on your main career. Like if I don't focus on what ISB expects of me, I'll be shown the door in 3 months or maximum 1 year. There is some deliverable. But and you work intensely to deliver that in a very short time because the mind is calm and there is no, you know, toxic thoughts that are, how do I stab a chaku on my colleague? None of that. Let everybody flourish. Let them all be happy. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, as Bhumika just read and recited beautifully. So there's a lot of time that is there. So if I had to say to youngsters, do find time. Maybe in the weekday it's not possible if you're doing commuting and so on. But in weekends, go and start something that you intended to do but did not. Maybe learn mrudangam. Maybe learn sitar. Maybe go to our orphanage, teach some street children. Go to an old age home. There are zillions of causes and there are zillions of great people who are doing great work. Just plug into them. And as Rohit and I were talking along with Rahul and Nipun before this conversation, nobody is really amused if I write a check for 10 lakhs. That enough people are giving money. What they need is people's time. And if you are able to spend that time, even if it is to start with 2 hours a week, then we are starting to set foot on the world of service. And today there is a huge body of literature on servant leadership, that the leader is first a servant and then a, you know, Malik. Unfortunately, we think once we are a leader, I twirl my mush and think I am God's gift to mankind and others have to do at my beckoning. This is all rubbish. So the moment we turn the tables and say, I am given this opportunity to lead, and therefore it is a blessing to me from the people who are my so-called followers, and therefore it is my beholden duty to be of service to them, then the whole world changes. So even within an organization, the obnoxious, toxic, competitive spirit is gone, and you're saying, how can I be of service to my colleagues, to my subordinates, to my superiors, and so on. This is one thing that is very, very important. And once you take service as the main reason for your existence, then you also look for opportunities on avenues and spaces like service space. How do I, be of service to humanity? Because my premise is there is incredible suffering in humanity and in, of course, animals. The less we talk, the better. They are struggling constantly for their survival, whether it is dogs or cats or elephants or whatever. You know, the way that we have been treating animals is scary. That where is humanity heading? For example, yesterday I read a news item of some fellows in Kerala throwing one burning tire on an elephant, and unfortunately it got stuck on its big ear and it didn't know how to extricate and it died a miserable death. Somebody else, when a dog is barking, we from the balcony we just fling hot water or hot oil and that's the end of it. Somebody else, you know, throws out of fun some Diwali crackers on a cow and essentially incapacitates it. And these are all last 24 hours events, by the way. This is so recurring. So there is so much of misery in the world. The other thing I wanted to say yesterday, I saw an item of a leopard that was killed and eaten. Are, is there no other thing to eat than a leopard? I understand. I fail to understand. So the call for service is so huge. You just have to scratch the surface of society and there are enough causes. And if you're doing service there, that culture flows into your work. You will be much more respected because you're not in this crazy competitive, elbowing each other, jostling for positions of power. You're there as a servant. You want anything? Come, I will serve you unconditionally. No bloody questions asked. And all this plows back into your inner journey. So it's a very wonderful virtuous cycle that you're setting in motion. You can start from anywhere. For example, you can start from your touch, your work, and say, from today, I'm going to be a servant leader in whatever capacity. And that will make you look at service opportunities in society. That will help you to start accelerating your inner journey. And there is no other purpose than this in life, in my view. Whatever money you deserve, you will get according to your karmic credit debit balances. No point in salivating for something which is not yours.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, sir, for sharing your beautiful wisdom, which you have learned through so much of life experiences and research and study in the last 62 years, and maybe more so in the last 20, 30 years. Thank you so much. And just to, I think, for our audience, if, you know, one personal takeaway from for me from this talk has been that when we talk about sticking to your values, really prioritizing values, or even caring for others, is not something to be seen as a sacrifice of self-sacrifice, but something which is actually congenial to your own growth and development. So thanks a lot, sir, for sharing that and clarifying that and everything else and all the values which you stand for and which helps us to come out of our own deep well, basically, at least make some moves of the deep well which we are stuck in, and also support the whole humanity and all life in bringing a bit more joy and blessing and grace in their life. Thank you so much. I will invite Rahul for a closing song offering as a tribute to the wonderful teacher you are and as a tribute to so many great teachers who have been in your life and have played a contribution in who you are today, which sort of then ripples out into like benefiting so many people like me. And to all actually the great teachers who teach through their life example to all of us. Thank you so much. Over to Rahul, and then we will close with a minute of silence in gratitude.
Before Rahul, I just want to thank Service Space, Rohit, Rahul, Nipun, Bhumika for reaching out to me. And you know, when they reached out, I said, what new thing can I add? I'm just an ordinary creature roaming around on the planet. But somehow they had some faith that I could add some value. I'm grateful to you for the opportunity. I thoroughly enjoyed the interactions preceding this through email and phone conversations. And it was also fast. About 2 weeks back or 3 weeks back, we connected. And this has opened up to me that there are some incredible human beings in every nook and corner. Service Space is one which is probably propelled by thousands of great Mahatmas, and my obeisance, honest, very heartful obeisance to all of you for the incredible work you're doing, and Godspeed and more power to you for reaching out to millions of people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Professor Sir, for this very engaging conversation. And one of the central themes you exposed, you espoused in this talk was that there is zero happiness outside and all this happiness is within. And in fact, our body is our greatest teacher, is what Kabir says. And with that song from Kabir, we would like to end this conversation. Lovely, we will be putting up the lyrics here and feel free, all of you, to sing along. ऐसा ऐसा हिरला घट मा कहिए, ऐसा ऐसा हिरला घट मा कहिए, जौहरी बिना हीरा कौन पार खे, है जौहरी बिना हीरा कौन पार खे, थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके हो, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ऐसा ऐसा धृत तो दूध माँ कहिए, बिना झुगिए माखन कैसे निकले हो, बिना झुगिए माखन कैसे निकले, थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ऐसा ऐसा कीवाड़ हिवड़े छड़िया, गुरु बिना ताला कौन खोले हो, गुरु बिना तारा कौन खोले, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, कहे कबीर सा सुनो भाई साधो, कहे कबीर सा सुनो भाई साधो, राम मिले थाने कौन हट गे हो, राम मिले थाने कौन हट गे, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके हो, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके हो, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, तारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके।
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.